All lines are now bridged.
Great. Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to the EHR Reporting Program Task Force. I'm Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and I'm really excited to have everybody here with us today. We have a packed agenda, so I'm going to jump right in with roll call, and I'll start with our co-chairs, Raj Watlani.
Good morning.
Jill Shoemaker.
Present.
Zahid Butt. Jim Jurgis. Bryant Karras.
I'm here.
Joe Kunich is not going to be with us today, but he should be back next week. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Ken Mandel.
I'm here.
Abby Sears.
I'm here, thanks.
Sasha Terma.
Good morning.
Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
And Stephen Waldron.
Good morning.
Good morning to all, and thank you again for joining us. Good morning, Jim. Gotcha. I'll turn it over to Raj and Jill to kick us off.
Thanks, Mike, and welcome, everyone. We're so glad that you're here, and again, thank you for your time that you've dedicated to help us improve this these measures. We are just going to go ahead and skip to slide 9. What we're passing is just the meeting process, agenda, et cetera. And we have so much to cover. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Zahid and Sasha if you're ready to talk about the preliminary recommendations for standard adoption and conformance measures. Zahid and Sasha?
Hi, this is Sasha. I think we could look at the data quality and completeness section of the report.
Okay, can we pull that up?
Yep. Let me see if I can find a page number. Yep, here we go. All right, so right now, all of the recommendations from last week's discussion are under for further discussion, and I think our goal is if we have consensus to move it up to agreed upon. I actually think we had consensus on a variety of these. Sort of just to frame this, all of these were part of sort of the measures for future consideration, but we did want to discuss them given the importance. The first recommendation, I guess, is that this is actually not one measure, but a bunch of measures, and that we would need to specifically define and prioritize each individual data element where we wanted to assess the data completeness. Some of them, I think, were straightforward enough. Others would need further definition, but it is not something that sort of can be discussed all at once. We'd need to consider each one individually. Kind of related to that recommendation that we would consider each data element individually in terms of specification and prioritization. A few sort of sub-recommendations. Actually, I don't know if this first one is related. It was more of just an observation that obviously if there's a required field, then you might have very high data completeness, but that doesn't actually mean much about data quality. There was a sense in our discussion that the mother's maiden name would not be the one that we would prioritize. But there were three suggestions to add for consideration to the list that was in the draft: preferred language, phone number, and email. Any, I guess, objections to moving this first bullet and its subcomponents up to the agreed upon section?
No objections from me. This is Raj.
All right. I'm moving it. We'll keep going.
Here.
As we would prioritize each of those particular data elements, either one of the ones that were in the draft or the additional ones we recommended, the goal was to consider the usefulness of measuring that in the prioritization. Not all of them seemed as useful as others, and the sort of themes of what would help us prioritize were equity and patient matching. Any objections to that?
This is Raj. Also, no objections from my side. And sorry, Sasha, just really quickly to clarify for folks, it looks like we jumped in the agenda a little bit. And if people have the agenda up, we were going to start with Ken and Jim at 10:10. So let's just keep going with this, and Sasha, you're into this, but we will keep it to 15 minutes as planned, so that we can make sure we leave plenty of time for Ken and Jim to continue from where they left off.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I'll try to take us through the rest of these recommendations quickly, and then we can turn it over to them.
Sure, thanks.
The sort of third area I'm hoping we have consensus is that if we're measuring the sort of percent a particular data element is populated, we don't need a look-back window. We would choose the simplest option, which would be to just check at the time the data is collected, which would be presumably after a particular reporting period is over. Any concerns there?
I think that's consistent with what we've done with other measures.
Yeah, and it conserves,
agreed,
I think, the complexity tokens for other things. This next one is really more of an observation than it is a recommendation. I don't know if we want to preserve it just for the record or we want to cut it because it's not really recommending anything, but it kind of says that when we interpret this data, we'll have to understand a little bit about the different nature of the way it's collected to have meaning in the interpretation. If data is collected at an encounter level rather than a patient level, that might add complexity for certain systems. In other cases, if there's something that's required to create a patient record, then we'll see, as we kind of observed above, higher completion rates, but not necessarily meaningful. And the same, I think, around the use of any default values. I don't think these are contentious observations, but they're also not really like recommendations. So I'm fine with cutting it or kind of keeping it whatever folks think is the most applicable.
Maybe at this stage what we can do is label those as other considerations or something like that, and we can see how we might fit that into the report. Does that work for everybody?
Yeah, this is Steve Walton. I was going to say it's almost kind of like a preamble to the recommendations, so just kind of I think it's important that, because we all know that completeness is important, but just because something's made required, as an example, doesn't mean that it's going to be of real value. So I think this stuff is important, but I think it's a preamble.
Yeah, this is Bryant. I think we as an industry need to come up with another term other than required and optional. We are still, anything that's made optional is likely to not be entered into in an emergency or when things are moving fast. So we need some kind of indicator that quickly trained individuals or, you know, healthcare providers can understand the importance of, you know, the upstream use of a particular element for patient matching, for example.
I don't disagree, although I'm not sure that this measurement is going to help us achieve that goal.
Yeah, but I think if there's some indication in the metric of why we're examining it, it could telegraph to developers and telegraph to implementers how to successfully improve a given metric. Staying silent leads to too much misinterpretation in my mind. So,
well, I think I'm struggling even because it's not necessarily. In some cases, some of the data elements we're talking about, I don't know that we're going to expect the same levels of population or data completeness as others. And so, you know, I think there will be an interpretive consideration around what does it mean? What would be the goal? When is it appropriate to skip populating and when is it not? But I think those are like larger policy conversations for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we want to put a comment down here and like other thoughts on data interpretation. Back to kind of the recommendations here, I think the next one is just that there was a suggestion that this be subgrouped by client and reported by quintiles. We felt like that wasn't clear for sort of what developers would program or report, and it should be clarified or removed. I think some of the Urban Institute folks offered a bit of clarification, but if that's preserved in a final recommendation, it would certainly need some detail. Any objections to moving that up?
Sounds like we can move it up.
The next one is more of an observation. There was a question about patients with multiple records in different systems, and aggregation would not be practical to deduplicate those. I think we were all on the same page about this. I would maybe say this one goes down into the sort of our new category of like, remember when we interpret the data, it's not really a recommendation. And the final one is also not really a recommendation. It is kind of a clarification. The category is called data quality and completeness, but all of the proposed measures that we were discussing here are really just about completeness. I don't know that there's like a recommendation beyond that, just kind of a note. I will remove it here. Do we want, Bryant, do you want to try to add down in the data interpretation considerations a bullet to your point about sort of educating on the importance?
Yeah, I think that would be, I'll try to work on something that, and I've had this discussion with HL7, if there's a way that implementation guides themselves can have a term used so that the data elements that are of utmost importance, but we understand you can't make it required because not everybody has a phone number, but 99% of people do. And I just got a COVID test this weekend, and the person didn't ask for my phone number because they said, oh, it says it's optional here, so I didn't ask you.
Yeah, it's a really tough challenge. I know, you know, there's like a balance, and Steve Waldron probably hears about this a lot, but, you know, if you require capture, then you run into problems for the tiny fraction of patients who don't have that information, and then you put in that people just put in bogus information, right? And so it actually has consequences on data quality because to get past the field, people just enter nothing. And so how do we, you know, make it more more clear? Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's, you know, we need that gray area between optional, required, if present and required, that helps with interpretation. Are you sure you want to leave this empty, but not force people to put in fake data? You know, an all nine phone number is not useful. So I totally understand and agree. We just need to, if this recommendation is about improving data quality, then we need to try to figure out how the measurement itself can help to improve data quality.
Yeah, I think there's probably a whole sort of project on, you know, what are the most effective ways to increase data quality that's separate from, is this looking at completeness an effective way to measure data quality? I say that partly because I have some reservations about how effective we'll find just looking at data completeness in really assessing data quality. But, you know, given that the scope here is these metrics, I think this captures some of what we've talked about here. There could be a whole separate initiative that looks at, you know, policies around data capture, education, best practices, and that might inform measurement also if we had a different best practice.
Great. Sasha, I think those are good points to add there. I think those are recommendations that we can add and present to the HITAC group of what's needed for the future. So I think that's a good point to add.
Sure. Yeah, if other industry initiatives come up with best practices in the future, we might want to revisit this category with new measure proposals.
Right. Right, exactly.
All right, I'll add that in here. If future industry efforts develop new best practices around data completeness and quality, revisit these measures. All right. I think that brings me to the conclusion here. Brian, I'll take a look at you if you put another data interpretation bullet in there, and then we can turn it over to Ken and Jim, I think.
Awesome. Thank you, Sasha, for being so quick on that. And apologies again. I pulled you guys in for the standards and adoption. So apologies, Ken and Jim, and I'm going to turn it over to you guys and Raj. Thanks.
Wonderful. Thanks, Sasha, and thanks, Jill. Appreciate it. Ken, Jim, floor is yours. I know we have a lot to cover, and we had to rush through things a bit at the last meeting. So we've tried to allocate a fair amount of time here, at least 25 minutes and hopefully a little bit more. And then following this, we'll jump back to the agenda and go into the clinical care measures with Steve and Abby. So, Ken, Jim, please go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Raj. So we have here in the document almost precisely what we presented last week. However, there are two small changes that I'll highlight when we get to them, or one small change and one significant addition. The small change I'll highlight when we get to it. It relates to the listing of Smart on Fire apps in various app galleries and other settings. The significant addition, which is based on some background data gathering from experts at ONC, is to propose, in addition to the metrics shown so far, collection of data on the costs actually incurred for use of the APIs, both the Smart on Fire API in clinician-facing applications and also the bulk data API. And the cost information that we're requesting will complement the existing requirement for that's in the 21st Century Cures rule for transparent listing of API fees. So this is sort of the real-world evidence monitoring of those costs that can be held up against the published API charges that are already required under the rule. So let's see. So I see that yes, thank you for coming down to costs in the diagram. So we can go back up to the top, and I will just also follow up on one, I think, clearly informed comment last week that the galleries are not specifically specified in the regulation for certification. So we had some internal conversations, including seeking advice from ONC. And because the galleries are a common method for listing applications, and because we were told that it is okay to request that information, even though it's not part of the certification process, as long as the metric is clear and measurable by the electronic health record vendors. So there are, I think, with that introduction, there are two areas that we could focus on, and I'll let Raj and guide us on the direction for this conversation to be most productive. We can certainly go through each of these numerators and denominators, and we also have in our comments here over to the right some sort of questions about how the ecosystem works and the some of the measurements that there may be expertise on this Zoom or on this Adobe Connect to answer. But in any case, we think we should do some research to answer some of the questions that we put in there. So we can begin focusing either on the questions or on the numerators and denominators. Raj, do you have a preference there?
Yeah, thanks, Ken. Why don't we see what task force members are thinking? Because I know some of this content was shared ahead of time. I'm unsure if people had time to look at it. I know everybody's got incredibly busy schedules, especially with Delta kicking up. So let's just pause for a second at this stage. Are there any task force members that reviewed something and have questions for Ken or Jim? And then if not, I would suggest maybe we can go through the numerators and denominators first and then jump to the questions.
I think, Raj, some people are entering stuff in the document in real time, and I'm not seeing it showing up. So if whoever's displaying can just refresh their screen now and then. You can see comments show up.
Perfect. Thanks, Steve. And Sasha, I see your hand up, so please go ahead.
Yeah. So if we're reporting this by certified product and an app gallery is a totally separate thing from a certified product, is this really saying that you can't certify your product if you don't report information about unrelated business lines?
Well, that'd be
I guess I'm still trying to understand the distinction between a certification requirement and things that are completely unrelated to certification.
Well, hey, it's Jim. Can I comment real quick? To me, that would be a question for ONC, because if the purpose is to do reporting to understand what's happening, if people's ability to create apps that are fire-based versus in an app gallery, then it would be important to have that information. Whether that means that is required for certification would have to be something ONC would address.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I think reporting total numbers of apps registered in the method required in certification seems reasonable, right? That's directly related to the G10 criterion. But having an app gallery is a value-added service, likely unrelated to G10 certification at all. And I guess I'm kind of confused by Ken's comment that ONC said that was okay. How does that reflect on the certified product?
I agree with you that question needs to be answered, but we agree it's a value-added product. What we're just saying, having insights into how the app economy is evolving and, you know, how are people building apps, we believe is useful. And you're right, ONC would have to answer how they would approach that with your certification question.
Okay, I'll put it in the document for consideration.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions about these materials before we ask Ken and Jim to run through the numerators and denominators here?
Is the EHI Export 1 new? Or am I missing that in Urban Institute's draft?
It is new. It's not new from last week, but it is new compared to the three areas that Urban Institute focused on. It's a fourth area that's in this, that's clearly in the regulation, maturing 1 year later as a requirement end of 2023, but a will occur by potentially quite different processes than the API standards. There may be overlap with the methods allowed, the methods afforded by the API to get some of those data out, but the EHI export being all the data in the either patient's own electronic medical record or a hospital/provider's full electronic medical record across the full roster of their patients will be required to be exportable.
So you're proposing, I guess, instead of the suggestions that are in Urban Institute's draft in Table 4, that instead you would have the metrics that you have in the document here under EHI export metrics, vendor availability of apps, and health system cost of apps.
These two sections, vendor availability of apps and EI export metrics, and the costs are additional section or additional categories.
And by cost, do you mean fees charged?
So that's a very good question, worthy of discussion. I think the actual fees paid would be what I had in mind as evidence of the real world analog to the published cost structures.
I'm ready to talk through the specifics. Thanks.
Great.
Great. Thanks, Sasha. And Jim, please go ahead.
I thought Sasha was going to start talking. Okay, sorry, I misunderstood. Great. So starting here with clinician-facing apps, which will be a potentially very common use case, we are looking at essentially clinician-facing endpoints where the FHIR API is exposed and apps can authenticate themselves using the smart authentication technology. So we're proposing as numerators to get a sense for the use of these apps, the total number of API calls, and specifically to understand how the ecosystem is being evolved. And this relates to both versions of FHIR and also resource types, which will be mappable back to the U.S. core version, or data even outside the U.S. core. Right now, as we know, what is regulated is that U.S. core V1 be implemented. U.S. core V2 has already been published, but there's no regulatory requirement. But we think in the ecosystem, the customer demand also desire by the vendors to stay current with it may lead to actually a self-maturing system even beyond the regulation. But it could be that ONC requires additional information like this to assess the value of requiring advances in US CDI versions, for example. I just wanted the screensaver here. Get out of it. Okay. Second is, for these clinician-facing endpoints, total number of creates and updates. This is capturing what has been a source of a strong customer request and ecosystem request, which is the data be written back into the electronic health record. For example, the result of a decision support algorithm. We think that there's an opportunity to capture write-backs into the electronic medical record, something not specifically called out in the regulations, but something that may well track with the evolution and the advances in the U.S. core. And again, by FHIR version and resource type for the write-backs that are using those data types. Third is to get a sense not just of the numbers, but also the total volume of data transferred and the counts of FHIR resources transferred so that we can understand how much data are flowing in the system. Counts of, and then to get at the apps, at sort of level of apps, to look at the count of the apps that have at least one launch, and then the count of the number of Smart on FHIR app launches. This is an important adjunct to the first three criteria, we think, because without it, it could be, let's say vendor X has one of its own Smart on FHIR apps that and no third-party apps, we wouldn't necessarily be able to judge that just based on the API calls and the write-backs. You could have a non-market-driven apps economy and still have very good stats for the first three. So we think this is an important adjunct. And in the other section, we look specifically at seeing whether we can actually glean what the lists of those apps are so that we can really have a qualitative understanding of the ecosystem as well. So any questions or comments or additional points by Jim that I might have left out before we go to the denominators?
Nope. You covered it well, Ken. Bill, any comments from your perch, Dr. Gray? Maybe on mute. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, denominators. Trying to get a sense of who is using the apps and how we scope the meaning of these numerator metrics. Providers with at least one EHR session in the period, so that's active providers. Patients with at least one EHR documented encounter in the period, that's active patients. Counts of EHR documented encounters, and we would defer to the this work group's definition of an encounter, which has been discussed, sort of the EHR use, and then also thinking about it per site, recognizing that there are going to be some nuances and potential ambiguities as to what constitutes a site. Would a large ACO with multiple hospitals be one site? Would a single EHR vendor instance across the full magnitude of HCA be one site, or would each hospital within the HCA ecosystem be one site? So there are certainly, I think for this work group, perhaps for metrics in other categories as well, besides standards and adoption, this definition is going to be important. any comments or input before we move to the next section, which is the patient-facing endpoints.
We've been putting comments into the Google Doc. Do we want to talk through them, or we want to get through everything and then come back?
I'm okay.
How much time? How much time?
Raj, we'll be guided by you.
Yep. I think so. A few things. So there's Steve Lane's left a couple of comments. One, as a reminder, just to refresh the doc. Two, to collapse Katie Fry's comments so other comments can display. So if we can do that, that'd be helpful. I would say let's run through some of these comments now. We do have a little bit of time here that we've allocated for this, so I'd say let's run through some of these comments now, and then we can jump over to the additional questions.
Yep. I understand the addition of queries as sort of an explanation of what the API call is, but is it clarifying or is it redundant?
I think it's clarifying just because you included, you know, write-backs in there. And I think it makes it more clear to readers.
Okay. By resource type required. Yeah. And these other ones are, I think, excellent wordsmithing and organization.
Sasha had some more overarching comments.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess this is maybe the similar point to what I just made, but if you have a product that achieves certification to G10 and supports, you know, read US core APIs. And then maybe you have other products, right, like Extra Fire that supports other Fire resources, maybe other versions of Fire, things that are outside of US core. The program here is going to report on the certified product. This program, as I understand it, doesn't have a mechanism to collect data on products that aren't certified. So I guess I'm kind of like, if we're asking about things that are outside the scope of certification, right, Fire resources that aren't in US core or write APIs, then isn't the reporting going to be wonky because those products aren't pursuing certification and aren't going to be reporting?
Well, they could report zero.
I think Sasha's point is that they wouldn't be required to report at all because they're not certified, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I don't want us to think that we're going to gather useful industry data on something that isn't required to report, right? So, like, we could ask a question, does a certified product do something outside the scope of certification? But the answer is not necessarily going to be useful for policymaking because some products might do that, but they don't pursue certification because that's not in certification. And so we'll be missing that data component.
Well, except, Sasha, on the other hand, you know, again, the whole purpose of this effort is so that purchasers can compare certified products. And as a purchaser, I'd love to know that a certified product can do write-backs and how often it does it in the real world, even though there may well be non-certified products that do that as well. So I don't see it as harmful here. I think it's a good step in a direction we all want to go.
As long as we don't generalize the data collection to assume that that's all the activity that's out there, right? So from a purchaser perspective, it might be useful to understand the scope of the certified product. From a policy perspective, it will not be comprehensive.
That makes sense.
Yes, I think that is an important distinction that is, I think, going to be very important to operationalize at the time of interpretation of these results, because you're absolutely right. We could be having some of this activity outside the certified product.
Yes. And that risk, I think, it's inherent to writing measures that include capabilities beyond certification.
You know, it's Jim Gerges. It seems like, again, kind of the same theme, right, that if ONC's desire is to understand what's happening, they have to address that, you know, if this is limited to certified products, then they're going to have to address what to do with valuable activity that occurs outside of it.
Yeah.
And then how meaningful is the certified, are the metrics around certified when there may be a lion's share of activity outside of the what is currently defined as the certified tool set? And that sounds like a higher level discussion. ONC may want to consider, you know, what falls under the scope of certification for interoperability.
Yeah. So I agree. So let's think through functionally trying to advance an ecosystem. As I mentioned, US CDI 1 is what's regulated, but there's strong hope and aspiration among many of us that US CDI 2 and beyond will be implemented without necessarily an iron fist coming from the regulator. However, if it turns out that by 2024, fire version and resource type are all scoped at US CDI 1, and using US CDI 2 is an expensive bolt-on to the certified product, that would be, if I were a regulator, a signal that perhaps we do need that the consensus process is not working. I think given the momentum, that's an unlikely result now, but it would be worthwhile to know. That's the thinking.
Well, and there's a little bit of nuance there too, because US CDI version 2, we anticipate, will be available in certification as part of SVAP. And so if, as we anticipate, US CDI version 2 is part of certification, then I think including it in these measures is very reasonable. But that's a little bit different than other types of standards which are not even going to be available in SVAP.
But if we scope the metrics only to what's available by definition in certification, then the metrics are simply a minimum legal compliance with certification.
Would it make sense to put both the certification base plus anything that's available in SVAP into the scope?
That's a good question that I would need some help answering.
I would be more comfortable with that than having it be undefined.
Sasha, would you be able to send some pointers to the SVAP that we can review and we can get back on that?
That might actually be a question for ONC. Can someone from ONC send out kind of some contextual material about SVAP for education?
Version. That's the standards version and advancement process you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, it's well documented on the web. I'll go grab the URL and put it in the chat.
Thanks, Steve. So we have about 5 minutes left. We can run a few minutes over and trim some of the final comments. So about 5 to 7 minutes. Do we want to shift over to the set of questions and see if there's any comments from folks on the task force about those?
Sure.
Yeah, so these questions are appearing in the comment on the right.
Oh, sorry, Ken, is that what you wanted, the Google Doc up with the comments there?
Yeah, those comments are there. Yeah, exactly.
Great.
It's got a little small. Yeah, perfect. So, these were questions about the ecosystem, I think very related to what we were just discussing with Sasha. Are vendors certifying their core products, or are they certifying bolt-on products? In other words, is a provider attempting to meet their requirements for using certified IT, are they all of a sudden buying additional products? And I don't know which direction the vendors are moving. I know that Epic just released its first version of the Bulk API in its core product since we wrote this question. So there's some directionality there. I'm not sure if Cerner is going to do the same thing. Are there any comments from the task force on that question?
This question is a little bit different than my point, because in either case here, whether you certify the core EHR or a FHIR module to G10, there's also the question of capabilities outside of G10 and how are those handled. And that was more the root of my concern about how this reporting would work than whether you certify to G10 as one module or as the EHR.
Great. I when I said related, I was thinking in a more orthogonal fashion. But that's
okay.
Thank you for clarifying. This question about can we require information on costs, I have confirmed that we can. Whether we choose to is up to the task force. A technical question, which I imagine could emerge during a public comment period and feedback from the vendors, is whether some of the metrics that we proposed, like counts of different apps being launched, et cetera, whether they can see that now. I don't know whether whether, for example, a query from a patient-facing app, an API call from a patient-facing app looks different than an API call from a clinician-facing app. So is there additional machinery that would need to be built into the products to automate some of these metrics? And, for example, can API calls between different apps or different types of apps be distinguished through metadata that's being transferred along with the queries?
So two comments here. I guess to answer your second question of sort of what data is collected today, I know from conversations with the EHRA, the Trade Association of EHR Developers, that there's a wide variance in terms of current data collection at the EHR developer level. And in some cases, this whole reporting program presents significant complexity for certain EHR developers in terms of whole new mechanisms to sort of collect data from their clients, aggregate it, and report it as part of this program. And so, you know, they're not looking at necessarily any granularity of data in that way today. And that's net new with this program. In other cases, there's certain mechanisms that are available, and it might be, you know, a question of building additional data access rights or data use rights on top of an existing mechanism. But I do think sort of broadly, a lot of the recommendations from this section, they're large in number, and some of them are quite complex. So I do think it will be important to prioritize sort of what of this, of these menu of options, is going to be most important for sort of the initial set of data capture, it doesn't seem feasible to me that all of the things that are proposed here in this draft are going to be practical to tackle right away.
Jim, do you have any comments? Just checking to see if Jim's still here. If not.
Yes. And yeah, I'm here. What is there a specific question?
No, I was just wondering, in this, in the idea of needing to prioritize the recommendations, because of the burden on EHR developers to do some effort.
Well, that are you saying it should part of the recommendations be modified and presented through the lens of informed by burden and be phased
in? My impression is that we're looking at measures that would go into effect at the earliest in 2023, and perhaps more likely by the time this process has played out, and the rules are and the metrics are finalized. Maybe more like 2024. So the developers do have time to address.
As we discussed, to me, it seems like it's a core goal of this. Why are we even doing this? My understanding is so ONC can understand this new sort of market, if you will, of app development and be informed about further policy. And so to me, it seems like if it's 2024, we want some sense of the lift, because some of the recommendations might be informed by that. But, you know, it's certainly a phase one of having ONC have what they need to understand the health of that new market. And, what if something that required EHR effort and cost was really important to ONC in understanding it? ONC might still decide it's too important not to do,
I guess my question is more, you've proposed in a variety of different domains, like 4 or 5 denominators, 5 numerators. Some of the numerators here, for example, seem significantly more complex to measure to me than others. Are all of these of equal value to ONC and other policymakers? I guess what I'm trying to get into our recommendation is, if there are metadata about this recommendation is super critical for ONC to have this information, and this one is less important for ONC to understand and also super complex to measure, that type of information will be helpful in prioritization, right? Because ideally we would pick ones that are that perfect mix of very valuable for policymaking and for EHR purchasing decisions, and not pick the ones that are, not going to be as useful for those purposes.
Well, Sasha, can you give an example of one you think wouldn't be as valuable but would be high effort?
I'm going to defer to you guys as the value, but to me, the volume of data transferred seems significantly more complex than the other ones.
Right, so if we started with the notion of like, by volume, you mean the third bullet, total volume of data, how many gigabytes would be technically difficult to manage, and therefore what is ONC going to do with that information in policy? Is that
right, and is the sort of additional value of 3 here, III, worth the additional work to program it and data collect it from every health system? Would ONC's insight from I and II be sufficient that we wouldn't want to prioritize III also?
Yeah, a comment about III, there's probably an A and a B in III because there's some ands in there, right? So for me, and Ken, your thoughts on the value of just knowing how many gigabytes, what we're trying to accomplish there. But I definitely think the count of FHIR resources transferred is useful. Like, because if I'm ONC, I'm thinking to myself, gosh, are people using it? What are the volumes? How many calls? What resources are actually, so not only was there a call, but I think it's valuable in number three to know count of resources. We'd like to get
that. And if you wanted to separate resources from gigabytes, I think that the resources one is simpler than the gigabytes.
The gigabytes, is the gigabytes and more about performance of the system, or what are your thoughts on the value of that?
I mean, it's a good gauge of the amount of, you know, how much data is being considered to be of value by apps. It's a good gauge, I think, of what resources may be needed. For example, in terms of bandwidth or cost of cloud or other other metrics to understand. For example, let's say we learned that there's very large amount of data transfer being used in high performing clinical sites. There may be other clinical sites that are precluded from participating in the information economy at this level. It's also important with regard to the cost of API use. So unless we know how much data are being used, we don't know how reasonable the costs per API call are, for example.
Now, hey, Ken, given what you said, if we look at the denominator, right, like I get what you're saying is, are we excluding anybody from an equity standpoint in the app economy? Could it be that maybe not all the denominators apply? Like if we're wanting to get a sense of that, wouldn't that be maybe like a per encounter? And then the second part is maybe that doesn't help Sasha, because it sounds like you're saying it's technically challenging to capture each call how many gigabytes were transferred. Is that your issue?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm just looking here, and I'm like, this is a lot of different measures and reports to write. Which ones are going to be the most valuable for prioritization, right? Like, which one would you want first? And then I can also kind of give some insight into which one would be hardest to get data gather and easiest to data gather. And measuring volume of data transfer to me seems hard and not necessarily quite as insightful as some of the others. So I would suggest prioritizing that way. But I think my broad strokes feedback is just that I think the task force will have to sort of prioritize a little bit within here.
Yeah, it seems like if there's a version, like if we said, what do you want first? You know, I'm skeptical that you know, that there's some critical mass of measures that gives ONC enough of a picture without them just being left with more questions, right? And it's like, how is it being used? How is it being used? And are there any ways it's being used that might exclude people? And what you're suggesting is figure out, prioritize a critical mass minimum set to start with that will actually answer ONC's questions and be sensitive to the volume of these and the complexity of some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My experience from reporting, right, is that we often don't really understand how we're going to use the data until we're kind of looking at it, too. So I think that informs my perspective of, like, we should start with what we think will be the most valuable, and once we're looking at the data, it'll be much easier to develop, like, the next round with that insight.
So, well, that's the question. What's the frequency of rounds?
Sasha and Jim, we got to transition. So, I appreciate the good conversation here. Maybe we can get some of those thoughts down into the Google Doc. I think this coming up with some kind of prioritization framework here is going to be important. I want to make sure that Steve and Abby have been waiting patiently, get some time to jump into the clinical care measures. So let's transition over to that now. If there's time at the end, we can come back to this. We have a little bit of buffer here, where Jill and I were going to have a discussion of other recommendations. I think we may be able to cut into some of that time as well.
Okay.
So Steve and Abby, over to you.
Yeah, I'll just run with it. I really want to acknowledge Sasha, because not only did she do a ton of work on the stuff we just talked about, she also has been working closely with our team on the clinical care measures. We actually met Sasha, Abby, and some others earlier this week and tried to sort of winnow these down to the point that we hope that they can move above the line quickly. So we are, if you just scroll down a little bit more, I'm not going to review the stuff we've already agreed upon. There was a tiny bit of wordsmithing that went into that, but I don't think it's all that important. We are again talking about viewing of care, summary of care records, or viewing of CCDA documents now that have been received by the certified health IT. And in the original recommendations from Urban, they discussed parse and integrate. They used that terminology, which was kind of new terminology, and already in certification, there is the term incorporation and a definition thereof. So our suggestion was that in lieu of the terms parse and integrate, consider referencing and utilizing the existing certification criteria for incorporation of received outside data, and then we have the reference and the language. So that was one that we thought made sense. Just any questions on that? Anyone uncomfortable moving that above the line? All right, again, I hope to be quick here. The next one was to request future reporting, that is to say not in the first version of this, regarding how often was data parsed and viewed separately from the received documents. I think that in the language we got from Urban, there was some ambiguity. It said how often is a document received, parsed, integrated, and then viewed. And at this point, up above, we have issues about received documents being viewed. The real question here was how often was the parsed data viewed? And I think there are other questions about whether it was otherwise utilized, but let's just focus on viewed now. So we proposed here that the denominator would be the number of unique CCDAs that were received, that were parsed, and have data incorporated, as above, or reconciled into the local systems. So that's the denominator. And then the numerator would be the number of these unique CCDAs received, where any of the parsed or incorporated reconciled data is viewed in integrated form by end users and clinicians. So there, again, we have another suggestion. And again, this would be for a sort of a roadmapped future version item, but getting that on the roadmap, so that vendors could start to incorporate the software necessary to be able to report on that. So we'd like to move those to above the line if folks are comfortable. Going, gone. All right, super. next ones were the use of third-party clinician-facing apps. And interestingly, down below, we just call them clinician-facing apps. We don't identify them as third-party clinician-facing apps. So I don't know if third-party is redundant here or should be added below. Are we really talking about all the same thing? I think we are. The fact that they're first-party, second-party, I don't know. So just a question as to whether we need that term third-party. Does anybody feel super attached to it, or should we let it go? Urban, in particular, you guys had that in your draft for this section. Did it have particular meaning to you?
This is Gary. It'd be okay to remove.
An objection?
This is Waldron. I think one of the opportunities here with third party means that it's not created by the vendor of the certified product. So.
And do we care? I mean, do we care that it's actually created by somebody else? I mean, maybe we do. I'm not saying we shouldn't, but I don't know why we care. I mean, if Epic has an app that I choose to install as opposed to, you know, Sally Hernandez selling me an app and I install that one, does it matter for the purposes of these metrics?
I think, this is Walter, and I think it matters in the sense of, are you creating an ecosystem or are you creating a module application, right? Because I think it's different if it was just Apple creating all these apps for the phone. I think there is a difference there because you have to have an infrastructure to really support proliferation of third-party apps that you don't have to have if you're the one creating all the apps.
So I guess, and then I'd ask the question, we don't have to answer right now, is should we add that third-party adjective to the whole list of recommendations below about the Smart on Fire apps? So I'll just leave that as a thought question because that's not my section. So we'll go on. I want to be efficient here. So we have one combined suggestion regarding the third-party clinician-facing apps. One is to report on app usage versus app registration. As we discussed it, you know, while patient-directed apps are really registered with the vendor, the registration is not necessarily have the same meaning for clinician-facing apps. So we were really thinking that this metric was meant to focus on app usage, as the title says, use of third-party clinician-facing apps. So the point being that the reporting should be on the app usage versus the registration with the vendor or the enablement in the customer system, because apps that are enabled but never used really are not of that much interest. If we are going to measure app enablement, it could be measured by apps listed as being allowed access. That's probably more applicable than actually registration. So within the certified health IT system, there's presumably a list of apps that are allowed access. So that's how you would measure if you were interested in enablement as opposed to registration. And we felt that the app usage could be measured by the API audit trails, and certainly all of the things that Ken discussed below require that kind of counting from the audit trails, you know, when you're looking at individual resources and individual, you know, fire versions. So I think that's consistent. And then we simply suggested that the reporting be done in these particular sort of order of magnitude levels and here we would say active use rather than registration, in the reporting period.
I think we actually wanted the active registration as a baseline, and then the later ones would count use.
Okay. So this would really be registration and or use, right? Because it would apply to...
You have to be registered before you could be used. This was, I think it was Gary who said that ONC was very interested in the total population of registered apps, and so the first bullet was intended to address that total population, and then the last four bullets would get at usage.
Got it. Okay, but we just say registered apps.
We could cut so that could registered. The active registration is duplicative.
Oh, okay, so... How like that? Apps with active registration. Okay, I get it. And then, Sasha, you had one of your experts talk to the fellow who provided the public comment last time, who doesn't seem to be publicly commenting today. Did you want to comment on that discussion?
We have set up a call for next week, so we haven't connected yet, but we're going to get to the bottom of it.
Okay. There was a question having to do with valid, this up above, our agreed upon recommendation, the very first one says metrics should be based on any valid CCDA document type received, including but not limited to the CCD documents. And there's a discussion, we talked about taking out the word valid, and a public commenter said, no, that's really important. We are pursuing that in respect to the public comment. But we still have the word valid in there for now, but that may be removed. So, again, we've got a few recommendations below the line here. Again, looking at app usage versus registration with the vendor, how one might measure these things, and then these reporting recommendations. So anyone object to moving those above the line?
My only comment would just be that I think some of this is duplicative of some of the ones we talked about below. And so after we decide on the standards adoption and conformance measures, we might need to consolidate the list because I don't think we intend to be duplicative.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And we can certainly do that after this.
Do the cleanup. All right. Above the line, any objections? Going,
nope.
On. All right. Wonderful. Thank you. Well, maybe that'll help catch us up a little bit. And Abby, did you want to add anything?
Nope, I think you did great. Thank you.
Great. All right.
Great work. Thank you, Steve and Abby, for the for all the work and for the fast pace there to get us some time back. So what we've done is we've allocated a little bit of time here. So we have public comment at 11:20. So we have about 8 minutes now. Where we wanted to go back up to the top of the document and run through some of those early measures that that we discussed several weeks ago that I think still need a little bit of some consideration. So I think there's still some ones under patient access measures that are sort of below the line or in that consideration phase. So we'd like to look at some of these and see if we can start moving them above the line. As we start moving towards the need for a concrete set of recommendations that we can get on slides. Jill, please jump in here as well as we walk through these. So looking at the ones up on the screen now, I also want to try and move this pretty quickly. Any concerns on moving any of these five that you see under recommendations for further discussion above the line?
This is Waldron. I don't think we need to differentiate between proxy and direct access. I think it's accessed. I think it's too difficult to think about that.
I think that's fine. And as the person who initially recommended the differentiation, I'm happy to let it go.
And Raj, I agree.
So the recommendation is to strike proxy from determine from that very first one?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. So can we just leave? Perfect. Thank you.
I think my only concern is the very last bullets, II. I think we should have an inclusion list of CPTs.
Yeah, and this is Steve Waldron. Zahid and I did have a conversation about Encounter, and I just sent it to Mike this morning. So we can either talk about it now or talk about it next time. So maybe I'll just tell you what we thought made sense. So we thought since the encounters also talked about active patient in several parts of different measures throughout kind of the entire set that we've been looking at, that we should think about it being a small set and to be those that are kind of the most common. So Saheed put together a list of SNOMED codes for inpatient. I think it's less than 10 codes. And then I looked at the value set database and found a outpatient value set list that's stewarded by NCQA that has 47 CPT codes, and they're the most common kind of ambulatory codes. And our recommendation is going to be using those two sets to represent Encounter and focus it on active. So I'm sure we'll be able to share those a little bit later. But that's our thought, as opposed to kind of trying to be expansive in regards to what could all the encounters be. Just what are the most common routine encounters in the ambulatory space and in the inpatient space, and use those as the metric.
Generally, I'm supportive of an inclusive list or a list of what to include rather than a list of what to exclude. My one fear, Steve, would be specialty products. And if we're looking at sort of the most common codes, was that still going to give an applicable denominator to, you know, a specialty EHR that only focuses on, you know, some ophthalmology use case or something where maybe their, you know, use of encounter types is going to be, you know, not the most common.
So I guess the only one that I could think of is if it is a specialty product for a procedure. So if it was a surgical, EMR only, because otherwise the 992 codes, either 0 or 1 for new or established, are kind of the basic kind of ambulatory codes now that we've kind of eliminated a lot of the consultation codes.
I think it would be uncommon to have a certified product that was exclusively used in procedures, but I don't know that it's impossible. So I think we'd want to think about that as we designed this program. You know, what would be the consequences if there were a product like that? Is it okay that then they would report nothing, et cetera?
Yeah, this is Steve Walton again. I think maybe what would your thoughts be is if you don't have encounters in those two sets, either the ambulatory or the inpatient, then you report on the top 10 encounter codes for your population of total encounters that you cover for your certification product.
I guess I would favor just making a more expansive value set. There's a lot of quality measures that define encounters, probably similar to what you and Zahid have put together. And I think if we pick some fairly, you know, large value sets to define that, then that gives consistency across products. I worry that if each product might be reporting for a different set of encounters, that introduces its own challenges with data interpretation. Because, you know, a telehealth product might exclusively have telehealth codes, right? Whereas other products may not, and then that introduces a degree of inconsistency that's going to make data interpretation hard.
Okay, I'll have another conversation with Zahid, and maybe Raj, we can bring that back as another conversation point in our next meeting.
Yeah, that seems fair. Certainly, and we'll talk about this as next steps, but the next meeting will be hopefully a review of the slides with these recommendations. So we can obviously still make adjustments at that point. We'll flag it here, and certainly if you can continue to inform this one, that would be great. Okay, if we can jump down to the next set here in the last couple minutes that we have. All right, so a lot here that are still for further discussion. I believe some of this may be repetitive, but thoughts on these recommendations?
Yeah, so the first one, I would just use the same categories. We just kind of moved above the line on the others for consistency.
Yep.
I think that makes the most sense.
Everybody okay with that? And then this one will go above the line. Okay. What about the other ones over here? Moving them up, unless we hear any comments now. We have about 45 seconds, and then we're going to switch over to public comment.
I don't know that we had consensus on uses in different calendar months. I guess it does note that that increases the complexity. Was there consensus that that complexity was merited, or is this just noting that that is the case for future consideration?
Yeah, I don't think we really need to be tracking seasonal variation.
Agreed.
I agree. I think we don't move this. This is Walter. Don't move it above. Do not move this one above. And if anything, in the preamble, we can talk about the fact that access over time was something to look at in this.
Okay, perfect. So if we can note that in the document, that'd be great. And we can flip over to public comment.
All right. Thanks, Raj. Operator, can we open up the line for public comments?
Yes, thank you. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Thank you.
All right, while we're waiting, I just want to remind everybody our task force call next week was moved to Wednesday, August 25th, instead of Thursday. So we're meeting Wednesday the 25th at 10 o'clock, same time. So hope you can join us then. Operator, do we have any public comments?
No public comments at this time.
All right, thank you. Raj?
Great, thanks, Mike. Great, so why don't we flip back to the document. Jill, I think I'm catching your comment here, but it looks like seems like we should use the last few minutes that we have to continue working through this. Does that work?
Yep. Yes.
Great, please. Okay. All right, so it looks like collection of that privacy data, I think we're okay here. Right, so we're good here. We can keep scrolling down. Okay, any comments on this set up on the screen now for those that can see that?
I don't know that we've hit consensus on this question of what the best way to measure success is. We have a variety of considerations in the recommendations for further discussion piece. Maybe we need to just sort of frame those as like, this is of interest and we need to think further beyond this task force's expertise on the best way to handle.
This is Bryant. We could invite the Immunization Registry Association to formally speak or present to us the state of and capabilities of immunization registries across the country to send acknowledgement messages that might inform or sorry, am I commenting in the wrong section? We're talking about IAS, correct? Yes. All right, thank you. If we have an extra meeting space available, we could formally ask a member of the of ERA to present in the agenda as a speaker in the agenda.
My big picture thought is that we have more sort of work to do as a task force on some of the measures we talked about than nitpicking probably the best way to measure success in this particular metric. So I guess if I were prioritizing our future task force times, I would want to dig in more to some of the meatier questions we had about some of the API measures.
Yeah, Sasha, I think that makes sense. So I think overall, the time is tight, so we don't have a lot of capacity to bring in some additional speakers at this point. That's something we could potentially elect to do as a broader high tech. But I think in the remaining meetings that we have, it's quite tight in terms of getting these recommendations onto the slides, another review of those, and then getting them to the report. So I like the idea of Sasha's recommendation of a broader comment around measuring success and how that's going to have to be thought through further. Any objections to that?
I'm not understanding the measure of success is specifically here refers to the IAS measure. So I think a broader discussion of success might not be useful. And given the importance right now in understanding this measure doesn't take effect for some time, I still think that it will be critically important to our nation's health that we get this right.
Well, I agree. I think what we're saying is that this task force may not have the experts, right, to your point of we don't have the IAS representative, and we won't have the time to write the specification for the measure. So I think instead what we would say in our recommendation is that, you know, our recommendation is that the measure be constructed with an appropriate indication of success, whether that is, you know, total messages minus fatal errors, ACTS, et cetera, requires some further research, maybe public commentary from other experts and so forth, and would be handled later.
Okay. Brian, what do you think?
I don't think it would take much to and they have shown willingness and interest in working with us, so I'm torn to put off for later what we could do now if we had time. But I'll defer to the chair.
Okay, why don't let Jill and I talk about this one maybe offline as we look at the overall schedule for the next two meetings, and if there's an opportunity to squeeze that in, we can certainly do that. Yeah. For now, I think we kind of leave this in this in the way that Sasha framed it. Okay, if we can keep scrolling down. All right, so I see a couple edits to these two on the screen now. Any hesitancy with moving these up?
I just I simply replace state with jurisdiction to take into account the territories and District of Columbia. Well,
that's fine, although the actual proposed draft did say state. So I think the point was, if you want state, you have to be more clear. You're maybe making a separate recommendation, which is that they don't want state, they want jurisdiction. And I think that's actually captured above, because weren't we recommending that it be differentiated by registry?
Correct.
So I think
I was trying to reflect
kind of
that
irrelevant.
Not all registries are at the state level.
Yep. I actually think we can just cut this because we recommended differentiating by registry, and so there is not going to be a jurisdiction or a state-based stratification.
Yep. Yeah, good point. Okay, so we can strike those. In the last minute we have remaining, can we continue down? I think this gets us to, this is all kind of on hold, so I don't know that there's much we can do with this right now, so we can keep moving down a little bit. And I think we're just about time, so why don't we pause there and just take the last minute to quickly talk about next steps. So our hope is that we can begin to, and I think the ONC Urban teams have started doing this, moving those recommendations that were above the line over to the slide format for our final set. Jill and I will meet tomorrow to work through some of these and see what we can comfortably move over. We would then hope to have that slide set sent out to the task force at the beginning of next week ahead of the meeting on Wednesday. So the meeting on Wednesday that unfortunately I will miss, but Jill has graciously agreed to handle it, will be focused on reviewing all of these recommendations and continue this discussion as we were just doing towards the end of this meeting. Jill, anything to add to that?
No, I think that's great. We will do as much as we can in prep, and then everyone will have a final feedback by the end of next week. Thank you, everyone.
Great. Thanks, all. Take care, everybody.